Welcome back, everyone. Good to have you listening again to Jay's Real World Podcast. Just wanted to talk to you a little bit, just give you a little update about myself. I'm sure many of you are aware that I published my memoir in June 2022. It was quite an emotional thing to share personal stories about my life that I had never shared with, publicly or to anyone, maybe. That was kind of a big accomplishment, not just in writing my first book and writing the memoir during the pandemic, but to share that. So the book is available on Amazon in paperback as a Kindle ebook. And I had recorded the audiobook and narrated it. I had so many people saying, you should be the voice on your own book. And I was actually a lead-in to the guest on the show today that I recorded back in December with Rich Ruffalo, because Rich had urged me to get in touch with his friend. He put me in touch with a great guy named Michael Kinsey, who's an award-winning audiobook producer. And Michael took the time to give me some training. I bought a microphone that was good enough to do the job, and also gave me some training on the software, and I did all the recording at home, my home studio. And then he said, I heard your story and I want to help you. And he helped me with all the technical aspects of the mastering and doing everything to get it ready to submit to Audible. So the audiobook is available on Apple. It's available on Audible and Amazon. So my book page on Amazon, Mysterious Ways, Jay Gittleson, it'll pop up. And then there are three options now. So you have the audiobook, the paperback, and the Kindle ebook. It's your choice. We've had our listenership explode with the resurgence of the podcast. I really took a break. I was really working. I wasn't sure, should I go forward with the book? And that was kind of a story for me. Maybe I'm taking time now because I really haven't spoken directly to you personally. So since Rich was really instrumental, Rich Ruffalo, who you're going to hear in a minute or two, my talk with him, he was instrumental in encouraging me while I was on dialysis, and then really didn't talk to him for a while, and then coming back to help me, encouraged me to do the audiobook and helping me tangibly with putting me in touch with Mike, the audiobook guy. So I just wanted to kind of share that I wasn't even sure if I was going to finish the book, to publish it. And it was November 1st, 2021, and I was going to give up, in a sense, to not move forward. And it was very depressing for me to think of that. I knew I had a message to share. It wasn't just about, what happened in my life, but it was sort of a map towards encouraging or hopefully inspiring people. My kidney journey of, kidney failure into dialysis and looking for a kidney donor and what happened, the magic and the miracle of finding a living kidney donor or having an anonymous living kidney donor who then revealed himself later. And then, going into the pandemic. And for me, the writing of the book was itself, I could say, cathartic, but more of a really positive journey of some introspection, but kind of taking the time to process what happened to me these past years and what happened in my life. And I put it out there. It's out there, So hopefully between reading about my reconnection tour on dialysis to reading about some of my earlier tough experiences as a teenager to becoming a father to, moving on through all the different experiences that I had. Hopefully it could be something that would be uplifting to people. So I really didn't talk about that. I didn't come on and promote and, about that, but I just wanted to let everybody know that I appreciate their support. And if you want to let people know about my podcast, Jay's Real World Podcast, please let them know that I'm on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, and some other ones. So pretty much every major platform. And there is a they can, it's not called subscribe in Spotify, I guess. There's no cost to come on board. But if you follow the podcast and just tell your friends to follow it, they'll get up, you know, notified when the new podcast comes out. And so it just would help me if you could just share with every person you know, just to follow the podcast, Jay's Real World. I appreciate it. So thank you again for tuning in. And I came to really love listening to certain podcasts and audiobooks during the pandemic, and it's continued on. So I hope that this is great. Rich Ruffalo was a fantastic award-winning nationally Disney National Teacher of the Year in 1995, awarded by Vice President Al Gore for the nation. He was a champion athlete. He lost his sight in his early 20s. He had retinosa pigmentosa. And he competed at the highest levels for the United States as a Paralympian in javelin, shot put, and amazing. So he was going to talk a little bit about that. He's an author of two books. He's just a great, great person, helps so many people. He's just a powerhouse of positivity. And so I think you really enjoy hearing from him. We talked on the phone. There were some challenges in terms of, you know, how we would connect. Please, if there's any interruptions or anything in the audio, we did it, you know, talking on the phone. So hopefully everyone can enjoy that. And thank you so much for everything. Take care. My special guest today is Rich Ruffalo, an amazing, inspiring, awesome person who would take about 10 episodes to fully do justice to, and maybe he'll come back again and again and again to be to talk with me on the podcast. But very fortunate to have him in my life. We have been in touch, you know, briefly earlier in life, like 25 years ago, and then then when I started dialysis in 2017, he didn't know that I was on dialysis. And I hadn't revealed to many people, so he had no idea. But then about a year into dialysis, he started to be reconnected. And I wanted to ask Rich, you know, just to remember, you know, maybe you can share like how and why we reconnected and what was going on at that time.
You know, I believe 25, first of all, thanks for having me on the podcast, Jay. And like you, I just want to help people by sharing my own imperfections in life, how they can reflect upon that and enhance their lives. So this is not a primer of how to do everything right. This is a primer of how to get up from all the mistakes one makes. So back when, 25 or so years ago, I met you through a mutual friend, and you were running your speaker bureau, which a Vision in Motion, and I was kind of busy at that point in life. I was speaking all over the country with several different bureaus, teaching full-time, traveling on weekends, when I'm off, it's times off from school and summer times. I was booking speeches. I was coaching, teaching full-time in Belleville High School as a biology teacher, and training for the Paralympics in between all of that, and also being a weightlifter and a track and field athlete for the U.S. Association of Blind Athletes. Don't know how I was doing it. I was juggling 25 different apples and spinning a bunch of plates. So we met through a mutual friend and wanted to see if there's any way I could maybe potentially do some engagement with you. At the time, I was completely overwhelmed, and it wasn't good timing. So we kind of met. We had a nice conversation. Then we drifted off for a while, and then we did reconnect right around the time when I slowed down a bit, Jay.
As you know, I just want to say that was an interesting point, how we connected originally. And I'm not sure if you knew the original part, but, you know, I had this dream about starting. I was a teacher also at the time, and I wanted to start a inspirational, motivational speakers bureau, mostly for school to inspire kids. And I was watching TV after I had really had this, like, idea, and I saw this man on
on this television show, Steve Adubato 101, and it was a man named Dave DeNotaris, and he was a guy maybe in his 30s. He was blind, and he was a motivational speaker. And I remember pushing, I like to eat, but I remember pushing the dinner plate away, and I wandered over to the TV set that was on in the background. And he was the person that I originally connected with, and explained the connection, that how I would have made the connection. What was your connection to that person?
Well, Dave DeNotaris, I met him in Belleville High School. He was a young visually impaired student. And I kind of big brothered him and got him involved in blind sport. Trained him in powerlifting and weightlifting and goal ball and some of these blind sports, which I started getting involved with in 1983. Excuse me. And so I kind of was his coach and a kind of a life coach as well, because I was blind. He's going blind. And he kind of was like my little brother at the time. So,
but did you have the same disorder?
Same disorder, retinitis pigmentosa.
What is
and
that?
It's a degeneration of the retina, genetic. Slowly but surely, you lose your field of vision, and it may have later onset. Almost like type 2 diabetes. You don't know you have it till you have it. And then I started losing my eyesight in my late teens, early 20s, when I was at my peak of athleticism in high school and college. And then it started to wax and wane away my eyesight. And it was devastating. And I was teaching at the time, and I was in Belleville High School, right when my eyesight was just about gone, is when I got involved in blind sport, met Dave.
What was the likelihood, Rich, what was the likelihood that you would have this student in your class with the same disorder and have this connection? How did that, I mean, was that, that was sort of unusual, right?
Yeah, well, technically he wasn't in my class, but he was a member of the school, and he'd see me in the hallways, and I taught his brothers. Okay. Well, he'd stop by and say hello, and I kind of took him under my wing, trained with him and lifted with him. And, you know, I wanted to show him the ropes because I've already been through the mill with this blindness thing, and he was going to be going through it. So it's good to be around somebody, I figured, that's been through it, to lend hope and inspiration to somebody who still has to go through it, like Dave. And it just kind of worked out. He was about 14 or 15 at the time, and I was, you know, let's see, about 32 or so. And so that's how we first met. And then he introduced me to you in a phone call one day, because I got him involved in speaking way back when. And so he went on his way and has done that. And he's kind of burgeoned since. And then you and I connected. We had a nice, I still remember like yesterday when we spoke, and I wasn't being haughty, but I just, there was no more room in my card of life to take on anything else. But then as time has progressed, Jay, as you know, we reconnected. I forget exactly how, but the vision in motion.
Well, I was at a school. I was at a school, and somebody came up to me. I was doing a school program.
Oh, that's right. Probably that was in Morristown. Yep, yep.
Yeah, and he came up to me and said, "There's somebody that wants you to call him." And I was like, "Who's that?" And he said the name, and I was somehow, I guess he had mentioned that our Vision in Motion, our company, was doing programs at the school. And then correct. I guess he reached out to you, and all of a sudden I'm at a program. I used to go to a lot of the programs, and he said, "There's somebody that wants to talk to you."
That's exactly
and it
right.
was you. And I was surprised. That was 25 years later. He wanted to talk to me.
We went full cycle, and I was speaking in the same schools. I did that every year. It was a standing gig. So we reconnected through mutual contact. I said,
yes.
"Hey, I know this guy, Jay. He's got a bureau." I said, "I know who he is. I talked to him a long time ago." You know, so tell me, let's chat. So we chatted, and I think he put me in the bureau shortly after that. We did a few things together, and here we are. And it's all good.
I started a speakers bureau with the theme of overcoming adversity. People that had physical challenges, overcoming.
Yeah, no idea at all. That was amazing.
Different things, right? But you would have had no idea the challenges that were confronting me. You knew nothing about it, right? I never said anything.
No. Not till you booked me, I think, at a gig or something. And then it had to come out that you had to be back at a certain time because you're on dialysis. And I said, "You're on what?" Because you were functioning like anybody else. And every once in a while, stopping, I guess, a couple times a week, getting her dialysis, but not making it too much public knowledge. You just girding your own cross and dealing with it. And
yeah, every other day.
It was amazing.
But it was sort of a very fortuitous thing for me that we did reconnect, because you became a big part of my life, not just booking you as a speaker, but as a friend and as a personal inspiration. And then,
I think it's a mutual admiration society, Jay. Like, you know, I'm kind of like you. I love helping people. It makes me feel good. You know, we all have egos in life, and people think, oh my God, you have a big ego. You know what? Everybody that has a big ego has big dreams. Being a person who has a decent sized ego doesn't mean it's bad, as long as you're not egomaniacal or egocentric. But yeah, I like to feel good that I help people. It makes me feel good. I don't help people so they make me feel good. It makes me feel good to help people, and it makes me feel valuable, mm-hmm. just like you, I'm sure, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing was magical for me was the personal connection, you know, with you. And when I finally decided to announce to the world publicly that I was on dialysis, you were there. I was already working with you, you know, doing some speaking engagements. But you, for me, you know, you as a coach, you as a, like a life coach, kind of you
right.
became like a life coach to me.
Yeah, I believe that kind of happened. And I enjoyed the opportunity to help you. And you're helping me, I'm helping you, and we're helping people. And that's what it's all about. No matter what you do in business, in life, in your walk or your journey or your mission, it's all about the people. If you say, I'm not in the people business, if you're not in the people business, you must be on another planet, because everybody does something to benefit people in some aspect. We do it more in the emotional, spiritual, psychological, hopeful aspect, lending hope to people. Like, hey, if this guy can get through dialysis and run a business, or if I could go totally blind and have all these dreams of athleticism and so forth smashed in front of me and still could pick myself up and do it, well, how about you? And anybody listen to this podcast, that's the reason we're talking today. We're just two folks, two hunks of protoplasm trying to make a difference. How about you? No better than you.
Yeah, you know, I want to mention, I mean, we people don't even know what you were doing athletically. Hang on a second. I want to get into that a little bit, because there's so much amazing in your life that you've done, and, you know, in your earlier life too. But you're an author. So you were a world-class athlete in the Paralympics, right?
Yes.
And with blind athletes. So what, just briefly say, what were you doing in the athletic world?
Well, in college, I was on a track team. I was rehabilitating a broken leg. I was originally a basketball player. Broke my leg when I was 15 in 7 places and just mangled it. And I limped around for a year. Couldn't even take PE classes. I had dreams of being a phys ed teacher. I love sports. And I like coaching. So a good buddy of mine, when I was limping around the high school campus, would say, hey, why don't you come out for the track team? He was a great football player. My friend John Gastilla, he was a great javelin thrower. He held a school record. And he said, you know, come on out. I had a pretty good arm. I'll teach you how to throw the javelin, and we'll get you in shape, get that leg rolling so you get rid of that limp and, you know, get your body back together again. So here at 16, I reinvented myself and picked up a spear and been throwing it ever since. And that particular epiphany in my athletic life ended up turning into something way bigger, because I didn't know – several years later, I'd be at Montclair State, co-captain of the track team, qualifying for the national championships as a javelin thrower before I went blind. And then after I went blind, I heard about blind track and field in the Paralympics. And I was a trained athlete and a decent one. So I began segued from that point and I was looking for something to define me. I didn't want it to be my blindness. I wanted to be excellent at something. I wanted to be an athlete. I always dreamed of it. And then I entered the stage, the platform of blind sport, Paralympic sport, U.S. Paralympics, International Paralympics, and the rest was history. Competed from 1983 till 2001. I was almost 32, Jay, when I started my athletic career for the Paralympics, which is tantamount to the able-bodied Olympics.
And you were
a lot
throwing
of great
the javelin,
athletes who,
right?
I was a javelin thrower, and I became a shot put and discus thrower as well. I was coaching that, and then I picked up the implements, and I became a three-way threat. And then I started to lift competitively, powerlifting competitively. I lifted to train for my sport, but then I competed in powerlifting events and became a decent powerlifter for the blind as well. And I even played a game called Goal Ball, which is kind of like a blind hockey, which is kind of vicious, and you throw yourself all over the court and wing a ball into a net, and it's very physical, and I liked it. So I did whatever I could. I reinvented my childhood at 32 and competed till I was almost 50 years old in international sports.
How did
I was doing
the
Kareem Jabbar, and I was doing the Kareem Jabbar, Willis Reed at the end, where they finally, I was outliving my athleticism by my age, and I finally limped into the doldrums or into the arena of retirement.
But I mean, so you were doing javelin, shot put. People don't know. Right?
Discus.
You were doing shot put and discus. And how were you making out against the other athletes?
I did pretty well. I mean, you know, I ended up at some point, my goal was simple. I mean, I set my bars high, Jay. I didn't want to just compete and say, oh, I'm on the team. I wanted to win a gold medal in the Worlds or Paralympics and break all the world records in every sport I competed in. I didn't just want to compete. I wanted to excel. And thank goodness for many 17 or 18 years of competing around the world, I eventually was able to do that in every sport. Indoor shot, world title, world record. Outdoor shot, I had the world record for about 30 seconds. My teammate eclipsed that in the next throw, but I did have it. Javelin, I broke the world record in the blind javelin many times over and over again. And even in powerlifting, I held the world records in lifting from my weight class. So in every sport that I competed in from the age of 32 till I retired in blind sport, U.S. blind athletes, I eventually did get gold medals and world titles in every event. And in gold ball, I was amazing. Finally ranked number one in the whole country for every team MVP for the season in 1989. And when I received that and made the international team, my wife was pregnant at the time, very pregnant. I made the team. I made it to number one, and I retired as soon as I did that. My hero in that essence was Ted Williams when he hit a home run and retired. So I hit my home run in gold ball, was ranked number one out of the 18 national teams in the country. Six players per team, 18 teams. They picked six players to be on the international USA team. I was seated first. I said thank you and retired.
Amazing. You know, okay, so, I mean, it's amazing all the different things you did athletically on a kind of a world stage, right, internationally through all you did. And then you wrote, you're also author of two books. One is called PEP, The 7 P's to Positively Enhance Performance. Can you tell everyone
yes.
what the 7 P's are? Just to get outlined.
I will. Yeah, and just let me just do a little parenthetical note. I also coached all the athletes I was competing with and against on a national and international level. And I enjoyed coaching and bringing my athletes that I worked with to win gold medals and titles even more than my own. That really meant more to me to pass it on and do that. That's one reason I wrote the book, 7 P's of Positive Enhanced Performance, with my friend Mike Moretti, who's a sports writer, who helped me with it in the main manuscript and so forth. And the 7 P's that positively enhance performance are, the first one is to plummet. Believe it or not, when you plummet and fall, sometimes when you hit your rock bottom, Jay, and people are listening in, you enhance your performance because you get up. Nobody claps for the guy who lays there. Everybody claps for the guy who gets up. That's the Rocky syndrome. And I love the movie Rocky. It was really a big part of my inspirational journey. He was a fictitious
yeah.
character, maybe historical fiction with Chuck Wepner, who knows?
Yeah.
But
I wanted to
became
go back.
That.
I just want to go back because you mentioned that about plummet and getting back up. You know, when we were quote unquote friend and coach to me when I was in dialysis, you helped me come up with some questions, right?
Yes.
I had this dream about doing a podcast. I didn't really know about podcasts, how to exactly go about it, but I started doing these interviews and dialing from dialysis, right?
And that was the idea. I said, you know, Jay, while you're sitting there three times a week for 5 hours, because your mind, people, I don't know if they know Jay yet enough that listen to your podcast, but your mind is a twirl-a-gig, a cornucopia of multiple, multi-sensory ideas in your brain going all at once. You're like a popcorn machine of ideas and enthusiasm. You're multi-sensory, explosive, end of the fireworks, boom, 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 display of ideas. So knowing you are sitting in a chair two or three times a week for 5 hours, hooked up to
three times a week for 6 hours a time.
Yeah. Oh my God, it had to be torturous, Jay. While you're sitting there for those hours, you got to do something. What do you think? I said, why don't you just talk? He likes to talk on the phone, people, and as do I. Call people up, interview them as you're going through this journey, and we'll call it dialing from dialysis. So that's where he started. I believe he started doing some interviews. And I said, look, one day you got to write a book. You know, it says in the Bible, you know, all things work for good for those who know the Lord calling to his purpose. Even good things come out of bad things, right? So while you're sitting there, let's do something positive. And you started doing that, and I believe it did help the time go by a little quicker.
It was one of the things I was doing. And so when we talked about it, and you even helped me come up with questions that you thought would be insightful to ask and stuff like that. And one of the questions that was, what was your darkest moment? Did you hit rock bottom, and did you ever lose hope? And when you said about, you know, plummet and getting back up, what was your darkest moment?
You know, I've had more than one. I think one of my darkest moments was when I sat in that doctor's office for the third or fourth or fifth different opinion. I kept coming back saying the same thing, retinitis pigmentosa, RP. And I was sitting there. At the time, I could still see enough to read. I'm reading a brochure about my disease. And the last panel of the brochure said, and you'll go totally blind. And the page was blank after that. That, like, rocked my world. I mean, it hit me like, wow, what am I going to do? So that was a rock bottom epiphany moment. I was a little bit down. I don't stay down long, but I did stay down a little bit. And said, man, I'm going to be 33 years old. I'm a big, strong guy. When I'm blind, I guess I'll be dead. Well, when I finally went totally blind, because it took years to lose my eyesight, it wasn't like I just woke up one day and I was blind. It was going slowly, like a leaky tire in a car's tire, the air coming out. When I was totally blind, I checked. Hey, I'm still alive. I'm really strong. I'm not dead. What am I going to do? So that's when I wanted to redefine myself. I had hit rock bottom as far as blindness and my situation. I still had dreams. I wanted to be an international athlete. I wanted to be a great teacher and coach, but I didn't know what I was going to do.
But there was one point that you did mention. We're going to actually play back some of the interview that we did in 2018 or so, 4 years ago. It's now 2022, it's December 2022. But one of the things you told me back then was that you were in the classroom and you were going to the principal's office for a reason.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Go ahead. In fact, I want to tell that story.
You know, and if anybody wants to see that, if you go to YouTube, Rich Ruffalo, some little snippets are up there in YouTube with me. And it's something that's called intro promo. In there, I actually discuss what I'm going to talk about today. You could see that. But I had a real rough day in 1981. Things were just going bad. I was losing my eyesight, trouble seeing the kids in class, grading papers. I'm coaching track and field with losing my eyesight. I'm coaching javelins and shot puts and dangerous implements and people running around and doing hurdles and pole. I'm the coach, and my eyes are going. So I'm wondering, can I do this? I'm all worried about liabilities. Can I do it? My confidence and these kids in the classroom. I can't read my notes. And at the time, my ex-wife and I were getting a divorce. It was just a freaking nightmare. And I actually pride myself on not being a quitter, because winners never quit and quitters never win. But I did quit for maybe a few minutes. I thought I was quitting forever. I had tendered my resignation that day with a letter I had kept in my filing cabinet for the right time. I felt it was the right time. I was decimated. And I brought the letter to my principal's office. And Jay, people, he wouldn't accept it. He said, Rich, this is 1981 before ADA, the Americans with Disability Act. I said, Rich, you're a great teacher. The kids love you. The parents love you. I walked it. They're engaged. You know your subject matter. I don't care that you're going blind. I'll get you somebody to do the visual task that you can't. You're staying in the classroom. I'll get you a teacher assistant.
How many years have you been teaching up to that, at that point?
About nine.
9 years.
Let's see.
You had
73, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, 9 years.
And you're just before you go back, how many eventually years did you, before you retired, how many years did you teach?
About 30.
So the majority of your career was, you were completely blind.
And I didn't think I could do it. And he said, look, we're going to get you some help now. And he ripped it up and threw it in the garbage. He wouldn't accept it. So I went back, and I still didn't think I could teach. And I went into my class, and they called me Mr. Ruff. And I was like a big, tough kind of guy. But I walked in my room, and I was just leaning against the wall. My kids were coming in, and I was quiet for once. And there were tears coming down my face. I wasn't sobbing, but I was just tears coming down my face. And I was quiet. And the kids saw me, and it was stone silent. I stood in front of my class after he had sent me back and said, I'm not taking your resignation. I went to my next class, but I was emotionally just drained. And the kid said, Mr. Ruff, are you okay? And I didn't answer. They said, Mr. Ruff, did somebody die? And I said, no, somebody didn't die, guys, but you know. And I finally said it. I'm going blind. And they probably knew it, but I was hiding it because they saw it ebbing away. But I actually admitted it. I said, guys, I'm going blind. One day I'll be totally blind. I can't do this anymore. And they went bananas. What are you talking about, Mr. Ruff? You can't leave us. And they were screaming and yelling, no, we don't want you to leave. We'll read it. We'll read it to you. You explain it to us.
How did you feel?
That was an epiphany. Like, Mr. Ruff, we'll read it to you. You explain it to us. Wow. So that's how we would do it. I'd have different people read a little something. I'll go back. Okay, now let's go over what John just read. Let's dissect the major points of that. Let's put this in your notes. Any questions on that? And we do a little bit at a time, move forward. A little bit at a time, move forward. Kind of like Jimmy V, survive in advance. And you know what? My kids did great. They became part of the process.
And eventually you did have an assistant, right? In the firm?
Not all the time. I had it for proctoring tests. I didn't have to have somebody hold my hand or anything like that. But there was somebody in there, not because of discipline or anything, but to grade papers and mark tests and proctor and stuff like that. Write the attendance in the book.
And then by 1995, you had been teaching for how many years at that point? 25 years? You were teaching? Something happened in 1995. What happened?
Well, actually, prior to that, 1985, my first principal in a different school district said I was horrible. Said I was the worst teacher he ever saw. He didn't know I was losing my eyesight back in 1973 at a different school. And he told me I was horrible. And by 1985, I'm in the classroom now. I had teacher assistants, and I'm just rolling. And I won Princeton's Distinguished Secondary School Teacher of the Year Award from Princeton University. Four teachers out of the whole state at Princeton's commencement were honored. I was one of them. So I went from the outhouse to the penthouse of education in 85, and then 10 years later,
what happened?
I was Essex County Teacher of the Year, New Jersey's Teacher of the Year, and Disney and McDonald's on national TV, Coach of the Year for the United States, and Teacher of the Year, Outstanding Teacher of the Year for the United States on national television.
Wow.
That was huge. Here I was, the worst teacher, when I could see, and now I'm blind, and they honored me as a spokesperson for my profession out of over 3.5 million teachers. That was unbelievable.
I wanted to ask you, you know, just going back, you know, who or what, who was your inspiration in fighting against the odds and helping you out of the darkness? I mean, you were going blind, but you were sort of going back mm-hmm. to that, you know.
When well,
you were going into the principal's office to give your resignation. You wouldn't accept it. Maybe he was, but who, you know, what was it really
there's
that?
There's about three or four prongs to that fork. Okay, one of them, my mom and dad. I didn't want them to cry over my blindness. It just was a trait. It wasn't going to define me. So I didn't want to make them. I wanted to make my parents proud of me. I wanted to make my current wife, Diane. I got remarried. I met a woman. 1984, we've been together for 38 years, and she believed in me, even though I was blind and just a school teacher. And she inspired me to show her, this is not all you got. This is not all we've got. Watch me. And the next 30 or 40 years or so, I'd like to believe I've accomplished quite a bit and given my wife and I a good life. So she inspired me. My parents being there for me. And not wanting to let them down. That principal inspired me. He saw a champion in me that I didn't see in myself. My students inspired me unbelievably because they believed in me. And they're the best judge of your ability as a teacher are your students. And, of course, I believe in Jesus Christ. And I gave myself to him in the midst of my turmoil, 100% dedicated my essence to him because he gave me the gift of life and the promise of eternal life. And that's what I've done ever since. There's been some pitfalls, but there's always hope. There's always hope.
You know, that's your life is a testament, you know, to that, you know, you, and you continue to give back. What is your biggest
Jay, when you went through stuff too, can I say this? You know, we know I'm a biology teacher. You know, you can live 40 days without food. You can live about 4 days without water, roughly. You can live about 4 minutes without oxygen, but you can't live 4 seconds without hope. That's why we do what we do. This podcast, your life, my life, our journey, to lend hope to others. We give people hope. They can hang on to that rope of hope.
That's really well said. I really appreciate, you know, your being available personally, you know, that you've established this friendship. It was sort of an unexpected kind of connection, friendship, that we would reconnect. We really didn't know each other in 2018. You didn't know I was on dialysis. And we had never met before. You know,
but I can tell the people out there that are listening, I noticed I'm very intuitive. I'm blind, but I pay attention. And the first day I met you, I know you were the guy that ran the Speaker Bureau of Vision in Motion. And all these inspirational people who have overcome great odds. And as I got to know you, you've overcome an amazing amount of odds too. I always knew that part of you doing what you did, getting people speaking engagements and so forth and work with them, I knew that you wanted to do that too. You never said it. I could feel it because I heard you speak. I know the way you write, your little intros, and just your very literary expertise comes through when you speak and present, that you could do what we do. And I knew one day, by me chatting with you about maybe doing a book, would get you out there on your own platform, because you need to do this for you to help others. And become part of the whole, not just a part from the flock. You were the shepherd of the flock of speakers, but now you could be one of the sheep too. So
you, know, you are very you have a very it's interesting. You have like a light that you can see inside people, or maybe just you saw inside of me. But I was we were in touch all the way through. After you were aware I was on dialysis, we talked, and you even coached my daughter from on her personal best in swimming in high school, which meant a lot to me, obviously to her, but to me. And then talking and relating and stuff like that. But after I got the transplant, I think we communicated. We didn't really, you know, it was hard for me in the recovery right into the pandemic to really communicate with you, because I know you're very positive, but also very, you know, kind of you see me, you know, you get me, and you were and you shine that light, you know. There were a few, you know, moments of really despair of seeing, you know, being isolated, you know, when the pandemic started, just out of the transplant, just a couple months after the transplant. And so I didn't reach out to you. You know, I didn't reach out to you. And what were you thinking then when you didn't?
You know, if I could share this point about you, if you don't mind. You're a super sensitive person. And I'm a little bit, I would feel to you, because I've been through it all. I'm kind of like D'Artagnan with a giant sword. And I think that you, when you're going through your self-doubt and the difficult stages of all of this pandemic and post-transplant scenario and all of the things you're facing, your Goliaths, you might have felt, if I call Richard, just give me some giant speech about slaying the dragon and move on, and I'm not ready to hear that yet. So, you know, I'm thinking about pretty much A, B, C, let's go. Crush the giant, step on his head, throw him in the garbage, let's roll, baby, let's go.
So here,
you weren't quite ready for that. Is that
25 years, we had the conversation. Then the guy at the school tells me that I should call you. Then we have this really intense, you know, working and talking and relating, getting to know each other, right? And then December 5th, 2019, I had the transplant. And then 2.5 years later, what happens? Where do you hear about
it? I'm listening to Dr. Gilbert's Success Hotline, everybody. It's 973-743-4690. Dr. Rob Gilbert's Success Hotline. Every day, there's a 2 to 3 minute message. One day I go on there, and he's talking about this new book out, and this guy, Jay Gittleson, that wrote a book for the ages. And the name of your book again, Jay, for the folks?
My book is called Mysterious Ways, Discovering the Miracles of Life as I Fight for My Own. That's a promo. You're giving me a promo.
I'm giving you a little time.
Available on Amazon. It's Kindle and paperback. And now with the help of Rich Ruffalo, who put me in touch with a great audiobook production producer, Mike Kinsey, which you could talk about.
Soon to be at audible.com.
Yeah, we just finished recording the audiobook. So
without
Rich, I wouldn't have gotten there for the audio.
I like being the coach more than being the athlete. It's kind of fun. I'm out there doing it. It's nice to let others do it too. And you know, you really look, if all you do in life, people, is to make an impact and don't share how you did it with others, how does your impact become generational? I want the impact that I've made on people, as does Jay, to be generational. So we're going to help each other to help you.
So what were you thinking when you heard that message out of the blue?
I was thinking, son of a gun, he did do it. And he's probably waiting to tell me that it's done.
Yeah, and then we started talking again. But, you know, you're a really great person in my life for a lot of people. I can't even imagine how many people you've impacted in a positive way. But
you know some things about things, and you're a mentor. Like, I use the acronym CHAMP, C-H-A-M-P. To be a real champ, it doesn't mean you win gold medals and world titles. To be a champ, you have to have confidence and build confidence. You have to be hardworking. You have to be altruistic, which you are, Jay. You're hardworking. Build confidence. You have to have confidence in yourself to build it in others. CHAM, you have to be a mentor and accept mentoring. In this situation, I believe I was a mentor to Jay a bit to help him through the process, but you have to be able to listen and be coachable and accept
mentoring. And then you have to be persistent, persevering, and strive for perfection. I know Jay does that because he's gone over his audiobook over and over to make sure it's spot on, perfect, a decibel perfection level, no plosives that don't sound like exploding letter P's. I mean, when you hear this audiobook, you're going to just sit there and have a fireside chat with Jay, breathing wonderful hope into your ears. So that's what we do. So to be a champ, we need to have all five of those letters covered. Jay, you've been doing it. You used to always applaud others in your bureau, Vision and Motion, for doing it. But now you're doing it. And that's kind of cool.
You're cool. So in terms of coming to a point, I want to maybe come back and maybe get into more, you know, detail about, you know, just talking about, we talked about the seven P's, P-E-P, the seven P's, positively enhanced performance.
We only did one P so far, the plumbing.
Yeah, and so we're going to have to come back.
I could do a quick thumbnail on the last six in about a minute if you'd like.
I would really want you to come back.
I'll come back. But I'll just really let people know the seven quick ones.
Yeah,
we got.
Just tell them what the other ones are.
Yeah,
and then
the second P is
learning thing.
Yeah. Yeah, first is plummeting enhances your performance when you find out who you really are. The second P is pride enhances performance. I don't mean a prideful pride, but ancestral pride, making others proud. Who came before you? That this is not all there is. Like my mom and dad, when I went blind, I didn't want them to feel sad. Third is to have a passion enhances performance. When you have a passion for what you do, it gives you a penchant for success and proliferating and promulgating goodness with the world. The next is your purpose. When you find your true purpose in life, everything comes into crystal clear focus. We all have a moment in a personal epiphany in our lives, maybe one or two different epiphany, that actually define our mission statement. We're not in things for the income, we're in it for the outcome. Number five is people enhance your performance. People you meet in life, people you want to dedicate things to, people that you try to help and teach and help others through their efforts, people enhance performance. When you get to dedicate yourself to others, not yourself. And the sixth P is pressure enhances performance. Now, people handle pressure different ways. Some people fold under pressure, and some people score the winning touchdown. We try to let people, by our experiences and hopefulness, be able to take the adrenaline, the fear or fear complex that we go through, the flight or fight syndrome, to where you win by dealing with the adrenaline and the pressure, not folding when it happens. And the last is prayer enhances performance. I believe in a higher power. I certainly do. I personally believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in God. Absolutely. My life, Jay's life, our lives are a testimony to that. All of this stuff doesn't happen by happenstance. You know, we can't just be here by some just lucky roll of the dice. There's a reason for our existence that supersedes the life here as we know it. So those seven P's, if you put them together, put them in your toolbox, they can help you move mountains, give you the power to drill right through them, and build a great future and legacy behind you. Some people build their legacy out of steel and granite and bricks and rock, attempt to touch the sky. I prefer to build my legacy, and I'm sure Jay does, out of love, respect for humanity, compassion and concern, and I want to reach the heavens and touch the face of God with my existence here on earth.
Amen. I can't say anything after that. I just wanted to say in the show notes, I'm going to put the titles and links to Rich has both books as audiobooks on Amazon. And he also is a coach and speaker. I represent Rich for speaking engagements through Vision and Motion. I'm going to put all his information there so that anyone interested in having him come speak or interested in his coaching or all the different things that he does, I'm going to have all that so people can see, click, read. And I really appreciate your coming on. I know.
Jay, I appreciate it. In my other book, The Rough Road to Glory, R-U-F-F.
Oh, Rough Road to Glory.
If you get through that, you can see if this Rich Ruffalo can get through that stuff to do what he's done, I can do it too. On my tombstone, I want to put dying trying. If I can,
you can.
And I want to invite you to come back again and get more into detail about the seven P's and about more about your, you know, things that you are doing to help others and just your personal philosophy on life. And, you know, I really do want you to come back.
I'll be back. Who said that once? Was that the Terminator? I'll be back.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for listening, Jay. Thanks for having me on. You keep doing what you're doing, man. Your vision in motion, years ago you put it together. You had no idea that that vision would be current, concurrent, and futuristic. And you're always in motion. If you're not in motion, you're at rest. An object in motion remains in motion. An object at rest remains at rest. Keep on rolling, baby.
Thank you. And we'll talk real soon.
Take care, everybody. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you again to Rich Ruffalo, who joined us on the podcast. His books are Rough Road to Glory, his story, his personal story, and he has a second book, The Seven P's to Positively Enhance Performance. I'll put them in the show notes, so be sure to check those out. And thanks again for supporting the podcast, Jay's Real World, on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, and Google. Don't forget to follow, spread the word, and we'll be in touch soon. Until next time, God bless.